You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
In the beginning, there was darkness. Then, out of the void, came fire, smoke, Rodo. Fantasy excellence begins here.
This is your time.
The Rodo Experts in the Morning starts now.
It is Tuesday, June 6th, 2017. And this is the Roto Experts in the Morning. Alongside the fantasy executive, Corey Parson, the King, Scott Angle, and CTM Baseball's Matt Modica. My name is Greg Sussman. Happy Tuesday, everybody, from Musty Studio 34 here in New York City. Exciting day for you, exciting program for you. We're getting into some baseball from the last couple of injuries we got to get to. We will also get into the Roto Experts Exclusive Edge preview for today. My boy Frank Stample, co-host of Best Fantasy Best Friends Forever. We will break down his deep sleepers, a couple of them I picked out that I think could be fantasy relevant, as well as some of the rookie tight ends and wide receivers. We did some running backs last week. I want to look at last year's rookie wide receivers. Look at who did well, and then what you can expect from this year's crew. Corey Parson, how you doing, my man?
Yeah, what's the deal, Greg? How you feeling this morning?
I'm not doing great.
Yeah, I know. I feel like, you know, it's a little bit warm in here, but we got it covered. We'll figure it out. You know what I mean? We're going to take you up to 10 a.m. Eastern time, and then we're going to talk some baseball, some football, and whatever else catches our, tickles our fancy, and we'll have a good time with it. You feel what I'm saying, Scotty? I see you got a Met hat on. Say hello to me, Scott.
You said she got it.
Can you say hello to me, Scott?
Hello, Corey.
Thank you.
And your fake Warriors hat.
He hating already. It's not even 8:05 and Scott's hating.
It's amazing.
It is amazing. You didn't even ask me
why I'm not doing so well.
Why are you not doing well, Greg?
My laptop charger broke this morning.
I'm sorry to
hear
that.
In the studio. I just pulled it out of my bag and it just ripped.
That's inconvenient.
Everything's right getting injured in fantasy, unfortunately.
You are depressed today, Scotty.
What's going on?
Who is it? Are you thinking about 1984?
I've lost four players in 2 weeks, but I'm still contending. But it's starting to annoy me. Last week, I lost Mike Trout and Danny Duffy, and this week, Justin Bour and Eduardo Rodriguez. All in the same league.
Your boy, it's the Greenwich Street Tavern.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in that league with you.
Yeah, but so. I'm still in the mix, so.
Yeah. I told you it would all go downhill once Mike Trout got hurt. You didn't believe me.
Well, after we made the trade, we heard Mike Trout was going to miss another 2 weeks.
No, quite the contrary. We made the trade. Mike Trout's coming back in the All-Star break. Things are really picking up. Well,
Dr. A said he's probably going to miss 10 weeks.
Well, you know what? Dr. A's not Mike Trout. The superstar. Superhuman.
All right. You keep hoping.
I will. That's why I traded for him. All right. Matty Mo, how are you, my man?
I'm doing good. Represent a little Sharknado today, all blacked out, you know.
That's what's going on with Sharknado.
Yeah.
Another terrific start
for him yesterday.
Since May and June, 59 strikeouts, one walk.
Yeah. Last five starts, only 10 earned runs, 39 strikeouts, has brought his ERA from 5.44 to 4.29.
It's been a good day, good month or two for Jeff Smarger. When we come back, we'll take a look at some of the baseball injuries. Scotty mentioned a couple of them. We'll break it down for you here. Coming up next, this is the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. All right, let's get into some of the injuries here from last night before I tell you about my cleansing drop, as Tony Sinatra referred to it as.
It's still the Memorial Day soundtrack.
Living in America.
Black coffee and a hard roll.
Anyway, the injuries, start from yesterday. Scott mentioned one of them just a moment ago, and that's Eduardo Rodriguez. Now, he battled a knee injury last year. In spring training, took him until about mid-May to come back, struggled initially coming back, but back to the minor leagues, came back up, and then he was pretty solid the second half of the year. Of course, by then I'd already dropped him, but you know what, he came back and he stunk. This year in spring, bothered by a little bit of a knee injury, started the season on time, you know, was slowly kind of building up. And over the last few weeks, last month, Eduardo Rodriguez has been as solid as they come, right? Like quality start after quality start after quality start. Didn't pitch great in his last outing, but you felt okay. Listen, it was a blip on the radar because he'd really been pitching very, very well. Then he hits the DL, and he's going to be out at least 3 to 4 weeks because they're going to rest him for 2 weeks, see if the inflammation goes down. If not, he's done it for the year because he's going to need surgery. This is very bad for Eduardo Rodriguez. I have, and I hate to say it because it's been a recurring knee injury, I have very little optimism when it comes to this guy's knee, Matt.
And like I said last week, it was pretty crazy. I was actually watching the game that night, and John Farrell went over to the umpire before the game started and said, "My pitcher fell in the bullpen. We're going to keep an eye on him." And they started him for some reason. I mean, he went almost six innings. He went into the sixth inning. I just found that mind-boggling as I was sitting there watching. I was like,
you know who would do that?
Oh, the Mets.
The Mets!
Terry Collins would be like, you know what? Tonight you're going to pitch 120.
Yeah, pretty much. Rub some dirt on it. You know, you'll be fine.
How do you feel about that, Terry, that stereotype?
I don't give a goddamn hell what Mordica says. Come to goddamn City Field and then next day showing up. Oh, goddamn it! I'm a shark. I'm Jeff Samardzija. What the hell is that? Terry, damn Met fan.
Terry, it's the day after he wore a Bryce Harper jersey.
Yeah. What kind of goddamn Met fan is that?
I don't know.
Yeah. Anyhow.
As Eduardo Rodriguez owner, Scotty.
Yeah, in two leagues. Yeah.
Are you as concerned as I am about this injury?
Yes, I definitely am. Now, Corey, this is a neat subluxation. And what that means is basically he's dislocated his kneecap. Mm. And you were saying that you weren't concerned after the last start, but he did fall in the bullpen, mm-hmm. like he said, and that aggravated the injury from what I've been reading. And if the rest doesn't take this down, take the inflammation down, he's going to have season-ending surgery. And as people have been saying, outside of Chris Sale, this has been the team's best pitcher. For the Red Sox to get Price back, they lose Rodriguez. But Rodriguez was a really, really good value in a lot of drafts. And, you know, he was helping two of my teams a lot.
I own the kid in draft champions also. It's a little bit easier to recover from at that point. But E-Rod with this knee, we already know what the deal is. You know, he is dealing with a knee injury to start the year when he was in spring training. Now we got the situation again. So I agree with you, Greg. I am not optimistic when it comes to my guy, Eduardo Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Is Eduardo Spanish for Eric?
No, Edward.
Oh, yeah, it makes sense.
It's like San Diego Padres is like Spanish for like St. David Fathers.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you ever coach for them, father. Mr. Collins?
What's that?
Oh, Mr. Collins, have you ever been in a...
Do I look like a goddamn Padre?
No, that was like an Anchorman sketch.
Exactly what it was.
Go on.
The other injury that Scott mentioned for his team was Justin Bour. There's been no hotter hitter in baseball over the last 2 weeks than Justin Bour. Home run after home run
last
after home
month.
Run. Last 3 weeks, month, sure.
Yeah.
Sad the last couple days with an ankle injury. Then he gets an MRI, and then it goes from, let's sit him out for a couple days, to let's give him a week to rest, so now it's, let's put him on the DL. Again, 10-day DL doesn't bother me. It's resting a guy, making sure nothing gets worse, but I don't like how it's progressing each and every day worse for Justin Bour.
Especially last season, then he had that high ankle sprain.
He missed like 2 months. Yeah.
So this is not that encouraging. I totally agree with you. It's a shame, because, I mean, this was a guy that's gotten the opportunity to play every single day, face lefties, and doing a hell of a job. So, you know, it's baseball. It's the marathon. You got to survive. You got to replace. You know, it's not easy, though.
The Marlins don't have anybody quality to step up at first base. The first four home runs of his career against lefties this year, he's in a walking boot. So it's not good.
A walking boot.
Yeah, last night I came home and I checked my updates in my phone, and the lineup deadline was at 6, and I saw Justin Bour not playing tonight because of ankle injury. And I said, in a weekly league, I said, when I see ankle, not good. Pulled him right out of the lineup.
That's so interesting. Yeah. I would have just seen ankle. I would have left him in. I'm giving you credit because you obviously made the move at 6 o'clock before all this news came out.
Yeah.
But like for me personally, I see ankle injury. I'm like, all right, he's out for a day or two. He'll play the rest of the week. I'm impressed that you saw ankle injury and pulled him right out.
Yeah, because it could be some sort of sprain. If it's a high ankle sprain, you don't know. And if even if it's a low ankle sprain, he could miss 3 to 4 days. You know, it could eat up his whole week. So I pulled him right out.
It's a good job. It's a good job by you.
Nice job.
What about the Marlins fielding right offers possibly for Christian Yelich?
Yeah,
and some other Christian players too, Yelich, like AJ Ramos. Kyle. I mean, they're doing what they should do, right? Like the Marlins know they're going nowhere. This is a team that is going to get a new owner soon, so they're just trying to push everything down the line, which I guess makes sense. It makes a lot of sense.
How pass it off you, to the next guy.
How concerned are you, Corey, about Justin Bour's ankle
not at
injury?
All. No.
Corey don't give a damn.
Not at all. No, I don't have any
shares.
Any shares of Mr. Bour. But for the people who do, I do feel bad. But nah, he's got a bone bruise in his left ankle, so. You're going to have him, I say, about 2 weeks before he get back in the lineup.
All right, there you go. Yeah. So Justin Bour potentially hits the DL. Jason Worth officially hits the DL. Remember, it was not that long ago. Jason Worth batting .200. We loved everything about Jason Worth. He was one of the hotter hitters in baseball. Kind of calmed down, and an injury takes its toll. The Nationals quietly are kind of beat up.
They're kind of beat up, but they're still good. You know, people are stepping in and getting the job done. I think for the Nationals, it's keeping the pitching staff whole. If they can do that, I mean, I just really don't see how things are going to go awry for them this season. You know, they just have too many guys are hitting the ball too well for them. If Anthony Rendon steps up one night, Daniel Murphy's becoming an MVP. You got Harper, who slowed down in May by his standards, but I mean, he's still a beast. And I mean, Trey Turner still hasn't played his best baseball this year,
which is interesting because I had this in my notes yesterday, so this doesn't include yesterday's games. But Ryan Zimmerman now has 16 home runs after he hit one over the weekend. Trey Turner has 16 steals. Like, I know I killed Trey Turner about a week or so ago, maybe two, with Frank Stanfill, actually, on the Fantasy BFFs. And I killed him for what he was and thought, listen, this is a guy that's just not living up to expectations. You blink now, and he's got 16 steals. And I realized that, you know, everybody hits 30 home runs now. And the steals, we said this in the spring, they were tougher to come by. You have Billy Hamilton, who's got 30 of them. Dee Gordon's got a bunch. But Trey Turner at 16, that's a big number right now here on June 6th.
Yeah, that is a huge number. But where people drafted him, end of the first round,
yep.
Top of the second, they're very, very disappointed because you're not getting the run production.
Absolutely.
You're not getting the average. You know, it's almost like, you know, like you're getting what you expected from Billy Hamilton. Now, Hamilton's now producing that, obviously, but, you know, this is not what you drafted him for. So I think people are disappointed, and you're taking the unique perspective of looking at something positive for him because the narrative is very negative on him right now.
It's unique, especially for me, who is usually pessimistic about players. But you're right. You know what? You just said it, Matt, that Trey Turner has not given you what you... Both you and Scotty said it. He's not giving you what you expected, and Trey Turner he's not playing his best baseball. But I think there are reasons for optimism because at least he's running.
Oh no, I think that he had a cushion built into his. I didn't think he was a first rounder, but he had a cushion built in because of his speed. And the two things I thought he would do successfully was score a lot of runs and steal bases. I was never believing he was an 18 home run guy, but then again, in this day and age of baseball, who doesn't hit 20 homers? The average, everybody had him penciled in as a 300 hitter right away. I know he hit 342 or something like that. But it's tough. It's tough to hit 300, especially in your second year when people make adjustments. But I still think his best baseball is ahead of him.
Yeah, I agree with that. The best baseball is ahead of him. I just think we get very, very hyped on these young guys.
We do. We all get all in on the young guys, and some work out, obviously, and some don't. Wade Davis goes to the paternity list. He'll be out the next couple of days. I expect most save situations go to Koji Uehara. He got one over the weekend, and I expect him to receive them over the next couple of days. Wade Davis out at least the next 3 days. And then the good news. This is for you, Matt Modica. Coming back this weekend, it's the return of potentially Alex Wood.
Yeah, until I see him definitely in there. I'd be happy. I did put him in any league I had him in. He was inserted. Was he supposed to face about the Reds this weekend, I believe?
I believe that is correct.
Yeah, so I did insert him. I'm hoping he is fully healed. I'd rather see him miss another start and be fully healed than be rushed. So hopefully everything's good in the world with Alex Wood.
Yeah, hopefully everything is good with Alex Wood.
Did that. Yeah,
and the other Dodger starters, like last night's starter, Hyunjin Ryu, who did something really interesting last night. I want to get into that, and I also want to get into my cleansing. So when we come back, I will tell you who I cleansed, who I picked up. I'm feeling great this morning. You can see the pep in my step outside of my broken Chargers. battery just drains and drains. I'm watching it go down. It's the Roto Experts in the Morning here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Bruno Mars is cool. I ain't got no problem with him. Right. It's like songs the kids like.
Yeah, it's you know.
Yeah, no, it make you feel good.
It makes you feel good.
It warms the soul.
Exactly.
So, seeing Scott dance don't warm
no,
the
soul. No.
Oh, he's popping and locking.
This is your boy Bruno Mars, Scotty.
I like Bruno Mars.
I don't think Bruno dances like that, though.
Yeah, no, he did. Scotty, you look a little
I got my fill of Bruno Mars in Hawaii
this morning.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, you need a massage or something? You need something to get your body rolling?
Right, yeah, you need a massage.
I'm not going to give you a damn massage. Get that thing away from me. That little thing away from me.
How does Bruno Mars dance, Greg?
I can't dance as well, so I don't want to imitate him. Yeah, you can check it out on YouTube, though, whenever you'd like.
Don't do that.
Okay. So,
can't dance at all, so...
You've never seen me, so how could you?
You
can let the barbers be accurate.
You have no musical rhythm.
Let the barbers be accurate. You have no idea.
Let the barbers be accurate. You know, here we go.
You have no idea.
When music comes on, you move like Jello. It's just like it's weird.
Scott, I'm not at a wedding or a bar mitzvah. I'm in studio working.
Yeah, this is different.
I'm in studio having fun while I'm working.
So how do you know that I can't dance?
I can see it. You have no musical rhythm or interpretation.
Maybe you'll come to a wedding that I'm at one day and you'll see. You'll never know.
I might get a few laughs, yeah.
I think we need dance off.
Are you making fun of the music?
What? No, I'm making fun of how you interpret music.
Yo,
that's a little rude.
He gonna make because you can't
well,
make fun.
Well, you're
of,
rude.
How am I rude?
Make fun
yeah,
of. I didn't say anything. All I said was why
I owe you.
I
owe you.
What you owe?
You called me an idiot at the end of yesterday's show.
Yeah.
Oh, Scott is
yeah. Scott is a scorekeeper.
Yeah,
right? He holds.
Yeah. He holds. He has held that for the last 22 hours.
I was very hurt. I thought he was my friend and he called me an idiot.
Well, at least I'll call you a stooge every day.
What?
At least I don't call you a stooge every day.
That person's not my friend. You're supposed to be my friend. You called me an idiot. I was kind
of
hurt for
the
next few
hours. I call lots of people idiots, to be fair. One of those people...
You would never call Corey an idiot.
No,
you're like,
oh,
we're besties.
We are besties.
Yeah.
We've known each other for a very long time, so we're past the idiot stage.
Well, I do call lots of people idiots, though, to be fair. One of whom is Yasmani Tomas, right? I went off yesterday.
Why do you call him an idiot?
Because he doesn't play. And when he plays, he stinks. Right, so I do that, right? You know, I don't know if Yasmani takes offense to it, but I don't really care if he does because Yasmani Tomas is no longer on my team. I did it. I had the cleansing drop. You know, we talk a lot about players frustrating you to no end, and that's how I feel about certain players. I'm sure everybody at this table gets very, very frustrated over certain players as well. And when you drop them, it just feels good. You're like, I don't have to worry about this BS anymore.
Joe Ross,
great example. Yep. So I did it last night with Yasmani Tomas.
I think I understand your reasoning, but I feel like after watching the first month and how he played, it doesn't surprise me that Yasmani Tomas went cold.
Sure.
I feel like you're going to either regret this or going to pick him back up when he heats back
but,
up.
But who so, did he pick up? So that's the question you asked.
That's always your question, right? Like, yes. If you're going to drop him, who are you picking up? So I'll get that in 1 second. But in regards to your point, Scott, about he's going to pick it back up given how hot he was in April, I said it yesterday, I'll say it again. It wasn't Yasmani Tomas' slump that bothered me. It was that he wasn't playing that
wasn't
was killing
getting
me.
The at-bats.
That was the most that was the frustrating thing. If he could work through it, I could work through it.
I feel like he's going to hit again and he's going to get the at bats.
So
back.
Then maybe I could pick him back up.
Yeah.
Because
I predict that you will pick him back up at some point.
But if he's not getting at bats now and AJ Pollock say he does
playing.
Come back in 2 weeks. You know, it's gonna make it even tougher.
But isn't he like the prime choice if he's hitting to play left field for the Diamondbacks?
Hey, but my point is, look, I don't know what's going on there. If he's not playing now with AJ Pollock out of the lineup.
Yeah, but when Pollock comes back, Pollock plays center, right? Who plays left?
But that's not the point. The point is, right now, Pollock's not there and he's not getting at bats. That's
I know,
that's
but let's say Pollock comes back, right?
Okay, you got David Peralta who's going to play mostly, except for lefties.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Who do they have?
Chris Herman's been playing.
That shouldn't be the case.
Right, that's
but
what I'm saying.
But I also stated that, you know, his defense is horrific. And this is a team that's starting to, you know, having a better season than it anticipated for them. So, you know, maybe they're taking the other factors in, as I stated yesterday. Guy hit 31 homers or so and had a negative WAR. So he's definitely a liability out there.
I'll also tell you this, as a Yasmani Tomas owner, they have, he's not someone that's played 7 days in a row all season. I mean, they've given him days off against certain pitchers constantly, right? Like that's just not calling that at all. That's just telling you as an owner what I've seen, right? He has had many days off. Chris Herman's played left a lot. I know Chris Herman was your guy in the offseason. He's been brutal. He's batting 159.
Yeah.
Yeah, but in fairness, he does not get enough at bats.
No, he does not.
He got three catchers in. Herman's out of the mix. I thought he would play more outfield.
You can also, theoretically, put Chris Owings in left.
That's true, too, yeah.
You could Owings left to play. They
do have an infatuation with Nick and Metaton.
We've seen it with guys like Franco, et cetera. You know, they give these guys a mental break and stuff like that. I really feel like Yasmani Tomas is going to be the guy, and I'm going to stick in on him, and I wouldn't be shocked if you pick him back up in a month.
So, and that's fine. Now, you just spoke about giving Mikel Franco a mental break, right?
Yeah.
Now, they also gave outfielder Odubel Herrera a mental break.
Yeah.
Now, who was my guy, Scott, back in March?
Back in March? He had a few of them.
But who was?
Herrera was one of them.
Yes, he was. Yes. Odubel Herrera was my guy, and I sat here
you did.
After my draft, angry as all hell because I let him slip through my fingers. And I drafted Ben Zobrist instead. And I felt so bad about myself. And then he got off to this really cold start. I'm like, oh man, I feel a little bit better now. Well, Newell picked it up again. In his last three games, he's been absolutely scorching.
He has become only the second player in modern Major League history to double three times in a game in three straight games.
Well, didn't he have like eight consecutive extra base hits or something like that?
Yeah, something along those lines.
Actually, two doubles in a game, three straight games.
Odubel, still batting .200 for the Philadelphia Phillies. Now up to five home runs with 22 ribbies, homers in back-to-back games, three hits in each of the last two games Scott mentioned with the doubles.
But what's the moral of the story? We talk about guys we really liked in March. Why don't we like them in June? Unless something drastic has changed from their approach or they're injured. You know, there's still 4 months left of baseball. It's, you know, a long road.
Now, we also said that if you really like a guy, you're going to get him somewhere, if not in most places. Mm-hmm. I had zero shares of Odubel Herrera until last night. I dropped Yasmani Tomas for my man, Odubel.
Ring the bell.
And I feel great about it. I got a text message from Matt Modica last night, and he's just like, dude, it's time. It was like literally one of those text messages like, you need to do this now. It's like, oh, I'll wait for the show. We'll do it in the morning. It'll
it's like
be
a
fun.
Movie.
We'll do it in the morning. It'll be fun. And he's like, I wouldn't wait until the morning. Just do it now. Make sure you get him. Who cares? And I'm like, all right, I trust you. And now, in the lineup, outfielder, batting second for the Phillies, for my team, Keon Lights. So Odubel Herrera.
You know what's interesting on that, too? Ron Cafferty in our Greenwich Street Tavern League has Odubel Herrera, and he has shopped him to every team in the league for the last 2.5 weeks.
I think he stopped shopping.
Yeah, I sent him a trade offer for Herrera this morning. I haven't heard back.
I'll read the So he's got 5 home runs, 4 steals. I'll read you the Roto World blur from last night. Batting second, Costarero would have been a third straight 3 RBI game as he settled for 2 ribbies tonight. Still, it makes 8 extra base hits in 3 days for him, matching his total from May. To put it simply, he's back. Woo! And that's how I feel.
Ric Flair.
Well, did you mention to Keon Broxton that Greg's team name is Keon Lights?
Oh, man, I forgot that part.
Okay.
I might get a chance to talk to Keon again, though.
I hope so. Big fan of Keon, as you know.
Well, Roto Experts at the Park today with Keon Broxton.
That's right, Roto Experts at the Park. Coming up 8:55 a.m. Eastern Time.
See how I set that up for you?
Thank you very much.
With Keon Broxton. Last night, the Phillies defeated the Giants by the score of 9-7. It was Jeremy Hellickson going 5 3rd, 4 hits, 5 runs. 3 of them were earned. Hector Neris gets his 5th save of the year. On the other side, Matty Moore goes 4 innings, allowed 5 runs, 4 earned. Struck out 1 guy. Derek Law gets the loss. As I mentioned, Odubel Herrera, his fourth home run of the year. And
I think we went wrong here.
Oh, I'm looking at Sunday. I'm sorry. I'm looking at Sunday. By the way, Miguel Franco homered in Sunday's game. I was like, did Jeff Smart official last night?
Yeah, that's why I was like, I was
literally very confused about that.
As I remember Chris Vaccaro and me were going back and forth about how much we hate Joe. I hate Joe Ross and he hates Matt Moore.
Right. I was looking at Sunday because I wish I got the Arizona score from Sunday to figure out who played the outfield. I knew the Phillies won last night, though, but it was the Bravos that they beat the crap out of. The Phillies beat the Bravos by 11-4. It was Nick Pivetta in his first win of the year, going 5 innings, 6 hits, 3 runs, walk 3, struck out 4, while Bartolo Colon gets bombed again. Poor Bart, man. 3 2/3, 7 hits, 8 runs, 4 strikeouts.
Yeah, Bartolo is like, jump on him in the first inning because they had 3 runs in the first inning. He had an OPS, opposing OPS of over 1,000 in the first inning going into last night. So that's what you got to do against him. He's going to get booted from the rotation.
Yeah, I forget who the beat writer is on Twitter. He said pretty much maybe because the Mets and Braves have a doubleheader this weekend. That might keep Colon in the rotation this week, but the time has come.
The time has come for Big Bart. Sorry, Bart. Miguel Franco did not homer last night. In fact, he went 0-for-5. But Aaron Altherr did. His ninth homer of the year. Altherr, 3-for-4, 3 RBIs, couple of runs scored, 295 average of the OBP, sitting at 382. While Tommy Joseph in that first inning, Scotty mentioned, 10th homer of the year for Tommy Joseph. 3-for-5. Get the batting average to 250 right now. It's okay.
Yeah, and he ripped it up in May, and he's already got 2 home runs and 4 RBIs in June. Tommy Joseph was hitting 179, and he's already got his average up over 240 now.
Left-handed hitters in SunTrust Park.
I crushed Matt Moore for Sunday. We'll go up with the Shark, while Matt Modica is wearing that San Francisco Giants hat. We'll go to the Shark when we return here on the Roto Experts of the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Roto Experts in the Morning celebrates the Shark, Jeff Samardzija, who last night continued rolling. 7 2/3, 6 hits, 2 runs, walked none, and struck out 10 through 119 pitches, gets the ERA down to 4.29. Second win of the year. Bryce Harper's boys, Hunter Strickland, one batter, one strikeout, 5 pitches. Mark Melancon comes in, finishes it off. It was Javi Guerra pitching okay again. Mm-hmm. 5 innings, 7 hits, 2 runs, 3 walks, only struck out 2 though. For Milwaukee, I have to ask, because I saw this report earlier this morning. Eric Sogard pretty much plays every day somewhere leading off. They love Eric Sogard right now.
He just walks every damn game. He's on base constantly.
Is it? Not he's going to lose forever playing time, but at some point, don't we have to worry now about Jonathan Villar and significantly losing playing time?
I don't think yet.
Reports out of Milwaukee is they're going to let him work through this, but the way Sogard's hitting, no, they got to find a way to get his bat in the lineup. The craziest thing about Sogard is 3 years ago they had a face of baseball poll. And on MLB.com,
he would have won if it wasn't rigged.
Sogard won it.
Yeah, I thought he came in second to David Wright.
And, no, he won, oh, I thought.
I thought he came in second to David Wright because they rigged it.
Which helped Sogard.
I thought he won.
I could be wrong, Scotty.
Helped him currently is, Travis Shore is on paternity leave right now.
Well, it's the same thing that's helping Hernan Perez, right?
Yeah, now Hernan Perez seems like the loser in this situation more than anybody.
Well, Hernan Perez or Orlando Arcia, right? Like those two guys.
Yeah, I think they got to play Orlando Arcia, though. He's young. I think this kid, maybe 2017, he's going to have his struggles. I would look to see him have a better second half than first half.
Okay.
And, I think they're going to make some moves. I think what's hurt them the most is Ryan Braun consistently being injured, as Ryan Braun does. But this season, it seems even more prevalent. So if they could ever get him healthy, maybe they can move him.
Yeah, you were right. Sogard came in second.
Yeah. That's what I thought. So yeah. He came in second because David Wright won, and I think he would have won the game. He would have won the contest, but the MLB didn't want Eric Sogard to be their face. So whatever.
How long is paternity leave?
3 days or so.
Yeah,
he's
going to
be
really
gone any for 1 to 3 games.
Oh. Yeah, like in NFBC leagues, I sat him on my bench till then this week, and I'll put him back in.
Okay, that's cool.
One more injury to speak of. It was Chris Davis leaving the game last night for Oakland with calf tightness. That was Chris Davis, of course, with a K. And Davis, the power has been there, as you'd expect, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Chris Davis doing what he should do from the power perspective, batting with 17 home runs as far as this year. Of course, he's only batting 225, but he's got 17 homers. So you're like, all right, I'll take the good with the bad in a way.
It's kind of what you expected, too.
Exactly.
And it's still impressive considering it's home park.
Correct. But he leaves the game with calf tightness. Let's see today how serious that could be, because that could be a really big bugaboo to your team, given the power that you've been getting, of course, from Chris Davis. Last night, the A's beat the Blue Jays by the score of 5-3. It was Ryan Healy with two more home runs, up to 13 now for Ryan Healy. And Healy, he's got the power and the average. He's had, four home runs in his last 3 days. Healy's up to 284. The OBP is at 313. Ryan Healy is a streaky player, but Scott, he's been pretty good.
Yeah, he's been pretty hot lately. It was his second, as you sort of alluded to, it was his second two-homer game in 3 days. So he's hot right now. You ride it. Last week it was Chad Pinder. You know, this week it's him. You know, they're getting some hitting out there in Oakland right now.
And, of course, Yonder Alonso does continue to hit.
Another double.
Yes,
yeah.
Sir. Kevin Pillar.
Interesting play.
I'm sorry?
Pinder, interesting.
Yes,
play.
He is.
Pop off some waiver wise.
Yep. Kevin Pillar was 1-for-4. Josh Donaldson 1-for-4 over to Toronto. But it was Justin Smoke with a big blast. There was a solo shot. Smoke's 15th home run of the year. And Scott, I was the first one to say I am not believing or buying at all Justin Smoke. And I, you know, you would prove to be right near in this one.
I picked him up for like a nothing in two leagues, and he's been like a total revelation. This is a guy they were talking about in the preseason when I did my insider reports. I said they don't like Justin Smoke. He's going to lose his job. And something motivated him, the fact that maybe Steve Pierce could have played first base or they had other guys to play first base. So far, he's on the way to the best season of his career. Now,
easily.
Now, that was the good story. The bad story that I'm sure you're going to get to, though, was J.A. Happ.
Yes.
Dating back to last season, he's lost his last 4 starts and hasn't gotten more than 5 1/3 in any of them.
Last night? 5 1/3. 4 hits, 5 runs. He walked 3. He struck out 4. Not a good start.
He was letting up the long ball last night.
2 home runs last night. Of course, both to Ryan Healy.
Yeah.
For Sean Manaea on the other side, he's been really good.
Yeah,
Manaea, 6 innings, 4 hits, 2 runs. He walked 3. He struck out 7. And Manaea's an interesting name because last year, I picked him up when he came up. I was very disappointed because he had the typical rookie struggles. And I know a lot of smart people in this industry were back in on Sean Manaea here in 2017. I had buyer's remorse from last year, and I just couldn't get behind it. And then when he got hurt, given what Matt was saying about him, some other experts were saying about him, I tried to make a trade for him. It didn't wind up happening. And since coming off the DL, Manaea's really been terrific for Oakland.
Well, he's been, everybody says he doesn't pitch enough innings since coming off the DL. He's got 7, 7, and 6. I mean, it's been really impressive. It really has. As I've stated before, he's a young stud transforming before our eyes. If he had any kind of defense behind him, that could really help him. But, you know, he's got the ground ball percentage is right about 50%. You got to really like that. The BABIP is low, but also is the left on base percentage. So I think this is a guy you definitely want to own for the rest of the season. I think I put him last week about 28th for rest of the season rankings for me.
Now, here's two young guys we'll talk about. And you were in on one, and you were totally correct on him, Greg. Jose Barrios.
Sure.
Okay? The difference for Jose Barrios this year is the sinker. The sinker is really, really the pitch that is working for him. And when you look at Manaea, this guy, opponents were hitting 087 against his slider coming into last night. The slider has really worked for him. So it's about these pitchers finding their groove, finding the feel and stuff like that. You know, like for Barrios, we talked about, you know, the Rays seams on the ball. you know, how they're raised in the major leagues where they're lower in the minors, and how he practiced in the bullpen with the major league baseball, and it helped him. So sometimes these guys go down and they come back up, and you know, that's the time to jump on him. And you did with Barrios, and it worked.
Rest of the season, though, it's for Sean Manaea over Barrios.
Is it for you?
It's probably not that close.
I'm going to take Barrios.
You know what? So you know
it's close, though.
I can't do it.
You can't do what?
Nothing. So it's really what's really interesting to me is that we were off at a tree in the Gramercy Tavern League that was quickly canceled. But Vaccaro, your boy, offered us Masahiro Tanaka for Jose Barrios. And we were like, wait a minute. This is weird. And within hours he canceled it. But I was like, huh, is it weird that I don't want to do this?
No, it's not. I wouldn't want to do it either. I don't know if Tanaka's hurt or something. And right now with Barrios having, you know, discovered his pitch and his feel, I wouldn't want to give up on him.
Yeah, but this is a kid that, you know, his major league experience. I like everything about him, and I think he's going to be very good in the future. And I think he's going to be good this season. But I think you're asking a lot of him. And, you know, if the Twins are, say, you know, out of it come September, good possibility he's shut down and stuff. You know, I'm just saying I like him. I want him to succeed. I have him on some teams. We paid some nice money for him and stuff. But, you know, you have to look at, you know, he's going to have some struggles too. So I don't think he looked fantastic against Colorado. We all were drooling, falling head over heels for this guy. But I think we got to be a little cautious too.
Tanaka's been getting blown up here and there though too. But sure. The whole thing about a trade like that is though, do you really feel a need? Do you really upgrade?
Okay, but you say
potentially
that.
Yes.
I'm just
Tanaka does have. I got to look it up though. But I mean, there's a lot of. Tanaka should be better. If he's broken, that's the problem.
That's the concern.
The concern. Otherwise, for me, it's a no-brainer to take Tanaka.
I think the offer may not have been there, though, if Tanaka wasn't possibly broken.
Okay, but that's when you say you want to try and buy low on somebody. This is the definition. You got to buy them now. Is Tanaka going to be that 13-strikeout guy versus the A's? No. Hopefully he's not going to be the guy that's getting blown up for 7 runs. If he's somewhat the Masahiro Tanaka we expected coming into the season, that a lot of people were willing to start their rotation with, then that's a hell of a buy.
And you talked about the fact that we're all drooling against that game against Colorado.
Yeah.
But he also has looked good since then, too.
He's looked good, too, yes. And he's also looked, you know, he's also had some struggles as well. It hasn't just been he's been shut down. He hasn't just shut people down.
I'm worried about Tanaka, though. And I wondered, like, if that's that was the mindset of Vaccaro, too. It's like, maybe this guy is broken and I can see what I can get for him.
It's possible. Again, he canceled the trade very soon after, but I thought it was a really, really interesting one. Hyunjin Ryu went 7 innings last night. 7 hits, 4 runs. Didn't walk anybody, 4 strikeouts. I couldn't believe it. Like, listen, he got the loss. He allowed 4 runs. But as an owner of Hyunjin Ryu, I was pumped. 7 innings?
Mm-hmm.
That's great. And according to what I had read, he was desperately just trying to keep it around the plate, limit the walks so he could go deep into the game and let the chips fall where they may. I hate to say it, but I was impressed by this start from Hyunjin Ryu.
This was the conundrum with Hyunjin Ryu. When he's healthy, he can have games like this. And this is why I used to love watching the guy. Watched him live twice. And when he's on his game, he's great. But I just feel like it's a matter of time before he gets hurt again.
Yeah, but in a 15-team league, I'll take the most encouraging thing besides what you said, he was going 7 innings, was his manager saying, they asked him, does this buy him one more start at least? And he said, yes, it does.
So I had a bad feeling about that guy.
He is expected to start this weekend as well. Once again, the Dodgers are going to have too many pitchers for too few spots soon enough. Gio Gonzalez in that game went 6 innings, 4 hits, 2 runs. He struck out 5. When we return, we head to the park with the King, Scott Angle, Roto Experts at the Park, with my guy, Keon Broxton.
His guy, too.
Stick around. Roto Experts in the Morning continues after this. Runaway Experts in the Morning, 8:55 a.m. Eastern Time means it is time to go at the park. Each and every morning at 8:55, we get a chance to hear an interview or part of an interview that Scotty did with a player at Citi Field. And, of course, you can hear the entire interview on demand wherever you listen to your podcast, wherever you listen to us right now. You can listen to Roto Experts on demand with all the players and coaches and journalists that Scott got a chance to interview. Today, he got a chance to speak to Keon Broxton.
Yeah, and Keon was hitting leadoff last week when I got to, and he might see more time in that spot is if they're not going to use Sogard, it seems like they're reluctant to use Villar right now. And I spoke to him about two items here, about how he feels about hitting leadoff and also how he feels about the support of the Roto Experts.
Throughout my career, I've always been a leadoff hitter for the most part, so I feel pretty comfortable there. But here in the big leagues, it's a different animal. These guys are a lot better than guys in the minor leagues. So that leadoff spot is a big, big spot for us right now. And getting put in that spot, my objective is to get on base and score runs for the team. And so usually when I get on base, I think the guys behind me always knock me in. So it's just about getting on base and seeing good pitches and putting good will on the ball.
People like to draft you for power and steals. In fact, my co-host Greg Sussman's a big fan of yours, drafted you. And when you hear things like that, being a fantasy player yourself, how do you react?
That's awesome. I think I look at my fantasy football lineup sometimes and I see a lot of the same type of players I go for. So that's awesome that people, you know, want to draft me for the things that I can do on the field and just try to maintain and stay positive and keep.
There you go. Keon Broxton, Milwaukee Brewers center fielder. A little name drop there, Scott.
Yeah, he told me to tell you that he appreciates your support.
Well, I appreciate his support as well, and hopefully you can listen to the show, and maybe you can come in studio with us. Who is the other guy we tried to get in here, Scott, that I also support?
Oh, that was not J.C. Ramirez, the other...
Jesse Chavez. Jesse Chavez. Yeah, that's another guy.
Well, I did extend the invitation to Keon because the Brewers are coming back into July to play the Yankees.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So love to see Keon here in studio. But, big fan.
You know, this guy had a very, very cold first month. In April, he only hit 191 with one home run, three RBIs. Somehow he did steal six bases. But then May was just a heck of a lot better. And if you listen to the interview on demand, he'll talk about how he changed his approach to the plate, you know, in terms of how far he stood away from the plate, and it led to a really, really good month of May.
Yeah, he had a good month for May. I know he's slumped a little bit recently. The average back down to 240, OBP back down as well. Not running as much, not homering as much. So it's been a bad couple of weeks here for Keon Broxton.
If you get the power and the speed, you can live with a 250 average.
I agree with that.
I mean, he's striking out 39% of the time. The BABIP's in the high threes, like 380, 385 or something.
But he's a fast guy.
The BABIP is going to be high, but you do hope that strikeout percentage can be curbed somewhat. I mean, the walks maybe come up a little. For 10% or so.
Yeah, and they're going to keep him in that lineup. I know they just called up Miller, but they're going to keep him in that lineup for his defense.
Yeah, Brett Phillips started in center field last night, his first career start. Yeah. But Keon Broxton will be back in the lineup today, I would expect.
Yeah,
Brett Phillips.
Brett Phillips has a lot of swing and miss in his game. He's got a lot of holes.
And he made a great play in the outfield, and he made a terrible play in the outfield last night.
Broxton pitch hit last night. Like I said, I'm confident he'll be back in the lineup today. You guys ever just look at your team and be like, wow, this team's just not that good? Did you ever look at that? Does that ever happen to you guys?
Yeah.
You know, that happens.
They're just playing well. You know, Council's doing a good job with them.
Yeah, no, not the Brewers, but your fantasy team.
Oh, my fantasy team? Oh, I'm doing a good job, yeah.
Always doing a good job. When we return here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, let's talk some football, gentlemen. Football during hour number two. Roto Experts in the Morning continues on right after this.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
In the beginning, there was darkness. Then, out of the void, came fire. Smoke. Roto. Fantasy excellence begins here.
This is your time.
The Roto Experts in the Morning starts now.
Hour number two Welcome to Roto Experts in the Morning here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Corey, Scott, Matt, and myself with you. During this hour, we want to remember all of the rookie wide receivers and the rookie tight ends and find out where they're being drafted. We'll also take a look at some of the deep sleepers that Frank Stanfill has for us inside the exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package, available on June 14th. It is coming. It is worth it. And I'm very excited to talk about it. So, we did a lot of the rookie running backs last week. We compared them all, and I thought it was very, very interesting when it all broke down. Now, I want to get into the rookie wide receivers from last year. Because, again, when we're drafting all these wide receivers this year, I think it's tough to recognize just how good or how bad that they can be. So, with that being said, I'd like to play a little game for you. Oh, yeah. You're interested, Scott?
I love when you play. You put out these games for us, and they're fun.
All right. How many rookie wide receivers or tight ends would you say had more than 3 touchdowns last year?
Rookie wide receivers
or tight ends that had at least 3 touchdowns.
That had at least 3 touchdowns?
Yeah.
4.
Scott?
7.
I'll say 5.
Scott hit it on the nose. It was 7. 7. What do you think is interesting? Now, 2 of those had exactly 3. Nothing to write home about. One of them had 4. Only 4 of them had 6 or more, which I find interesting. Can you name these 7 players? Corey?
Sterling Shepard.
There's 1.
Hunter Henry.
There's 2.
Michael Thomas.
There's 3. That's top 3. Corey?
Well, I got 1.
We'll get to you in a second, Matt.
That just popped in my head.
Wow, it is now it's fleeting me now. Devontae Booker?
Devontae Booker. He's a running back. He doesn't play with receiver
tight
end.
No, he can't. No.
Matt, who's your guy?
He didn't play running back.
Sterling Shepard?
Corey said him already.
Oh, did he say Sterling Shepard?
Yeah, that's what came to mind.
Scott? All right. So there you go. So that's very interesting, right? You named the guys that had the top 3, the most prolific rookies. 9 touchdowns for Michael Thomas, 8 touchdowns for Hunter Henry, 8 for Sterling Shepard.
Tyreek Hill?
There you go. Tyreek Hill is the other popular one you'll know. Tyreek Hill, we've talked about him pretty in depth. He had 6 touchdowns. Everybody else, the last 3 on this list, had 4 or less touchdowns. And yet, we're going to be talking this hour about a ton of rookie wide receivers and tight ends. And a ton of guys that are going to let you down, ultimately, in 2017. This is the point of this exercise. The last 3 guys, in case you're wondering, Malcolm Mitchell, Corey Coleman, and Austin Hooper. We'll get into some of the rookie wide receivers and tight ends this year, in 2017, when we come back. Roto Experts in the Morning continues on right after this. Everybody loves a hot, young, new thing. Most of the time, that hot, young, new thing is going to let you down. I named 4 players just a moment ago that had more, 5 players just a moment ago that had more than 3 touchdowns as a rookie. If you want to go by yards, only 1 player had more than 700 receiving yards. That, of course, is Michael Thomas. If you want to go by receptions, only 1 guy had more than 65 receptions. Again, Michael Thomas. Michael Thomas, by far, was the best rookie wide receiver last year. That's not an argument, obviously. But everybody else, while we're fine, not really right home about. Let's remember that here when we draft in 2017. Let's get into some of the wide receivers. Now, I mentioned before when we're doing this exercise, we're not counting Christian McCaffrey, Leonard Fournette, or Joe Mixon. Those are obviously all running backs.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the wide receivers, I have no problem counting all of them. Let's start with Mike Williams in Los Angeles. Tyrell Williams is there. Keenan Allen is there. Travis Benjamin is there. My man Dontrell Inman is there. And yet they still use the 8th overall pick on Mike Williams in Los Angeles. Now, it was a few years ago they used an early round pick on Keenan Allen. He was buried on the depth chart. A couple injuries later, he's starting. He got destroyed by the media in training camp, and he came out and had a fantastic rookie season.
Why did he get destroyed by the media?
Because he wasn't in shape.
Oh, okay.
And they thought he was dogging it, and they think he wouldn't be successful, and he was buried on the depth chart. Ultimately, it worked out.
I think it was Michael Floyd got injured.
I'm sorry?
I think it was Malcolm Floyd.
Malcolm Floyd. Malcolm Floyd got injured. Mm-hmm. Malcolm Floyd got injured. And I think somebody else also got injured there.
Again.
I think there's also someone else that got injured there as well. The boosted him. I forget who it was. Stevie Johnson, maybe?
Yeah. I don't think Stevie Johnson was there.
He wasn't there yet. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyway, somebody else got injured. It doesn't really matter who. But the point is, Mike Williams has quite a few guys he needs to pass in the depth chart to immediately walk into fantasy relevance. With that being said, Corey Parson, where is Mike Williams going in drafts right now?
Mike Williams is going pretty late in drafts. He's going about that 11-12 range. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's getting pushed down. He's getting pushed down draft boards a little bit because he's dealing with this back injury right now. So people want to see him get on the field, start to work on his rapport, his chemistry with Phil Rivers. So I think that's got a lot to do with why he's getting pushed down draft boards. And like you said, there's a lot of people in front of him on the depth chart. So I think that's one of the reasons why he's getting pushed down draft boards. But I think he'll start to come back up draft boards as we see him in training camp and get healthy and stuff like that. Because I think it's a specific reason why he was brought to San Diego. To Los Angeles.
I agree with Corey. I don't know about the receptions and yards this season, but I think he will be an end zone target. I think that's where he can thrive. If you look at the other guys they have, mm-hmm. Taking Hunter Henry out of it. He is a perfect end zone target. I mean, Keenan Allen's not an end zone guy. I don't think Tyrell Williams is an end zone guy. You do have the dual tight ends that are threats there, but who's going to be on the field? Are they going to go two tight end mm-hmm. sets? But I think Williams can fill that role for them.
You don't know if Gates will stay healthy, too. You can't count on him and be in the mix. If anything, this guy does spectacular because he can do right out of the gate. He can make those contested grabs, etc. The other part of it, you talk about all the receivers that are ahead of him, they don't have to rush him into a major role outside the 20s. So to me, he's more of a standard guy, but I'll certainly take a late flyer on him as well. I think they like some of the other guys that they have that are trying to define roles here. I think ultimately, if everybody's healthy 2 years from now, they'd like to have Keenan Allen and Mike Williams as the top two guys, but they don't have to rush into that yet.
They don't. Obviously, have to rush into that, which means I don't think we should rush into it either.
Yes, but doesn't it make their wide receiver core better that they have the two outside guys, Allen in the slot, and I think that
guys
was the
are playing roles. Yeah,
I think Mike Williams. I think drafting of Mike Williams is. I think it's what they're telling us is that Keenan Allen can't handle the volume of targets he's getting season after season. Because he keeps getting injured and breaking down because he's getting the ball a little bit too much. I don't think he's built to touch the football, to be running routes that much. I mean, you saw last year was a non-contact injury. The year before that was the freak injury. But when Keenan Allen was coming into the NFL, the knock against him was, his stature, his physique. Was he going to be able to take it in the NFL? And I think, obviously, we saw when he went down last year, he had 6 catches for 63 yards. It was 8 minutes to go in the first quarter. So I think Mike Williams is brought in there to show up those wide receivers to help take some of those targets away from Allen to keep him fresh.
They're different types of players, though. Ultimately, though, they should complement each other. Keenan Allen is a smooth route runner, smooth rider after the catch, etc. This guy is a spectacular playmaker and is going to make actually a perfect complement for Allen.
So here's the question, not based on talent, but drafting today, is Keenan Allen definitely a top 20 wide receiver?
Yeah, I'm gonna say he is.
I
want him to be.
Yeah, I don't think it's as cut and dry. I'm gonna say yes, but it's real close because I can make the argument for some other guys to put in there to push him out just due to the last couple of seasons. He hasn't been on the field, and you got to stay on the field, freakish or not.
It's just so frustrating because I look at we talked about Jordy Nelson a little while ago, off the air, on the air, whatever. And you have Jordy Nelson inside your top 10. Very high inside your top 10. You're very confident in Jordy Nelson. Where is he for you, Corey?
Jordy Nelson for me is 7.
So he's
7. I got him 6. But
so you're with each other here, easily inside your top 10 as well.
Yeah,
I know, Scott, you haven't done your rankings yet.
Yeah, but Jordy's going to be inside my top 10.
Okay, last year Jordy came off his ACL. A lot of people were hesitant about him. A lot of people are hesitant about the Packers offense. They're hesitant about Jordy Nelson losing a step. Keenan Allen is somebody that people are going to say the same thing about. Another injury, mm-hmm. coming off that ACL. A lot to worry about Keenan Allen. And unlike Jordy, he hadn't done it over and over and over and over again before. I look at Keenan Allen and I don't know, in all honesty, what to think. I don't know if I see this as a buying opportunity. I'm somebody that was in on Keenan Allen all in last year. I had a plan and I did a very poor job or a poor thing in that I went all in on a player I really believed in Keenan Allen. I did not, there was no roster differentiation. I went all in on my guy. And by the end of the first half of the first game, it was over. I believed in him. I look at it this year and I don't have the buyer's remorse as I do about some of the other players. You know, we've spoken about, you know, in baseball in the past with mm-hmm. certain guys have let me down. I still love Keenan Allen. I don't know what to make of him and when I should take him.
I have a question to ask you, Matt. Now, okay. Yesterday, we were talking about your guy, Sammy Watkins, and you say, you got to look at it like Giancarlo Stanton. If this guy stays healthy, look at the numbers he can put up, and that's why you're in on Watkins. You sound like you're out on Allen. You know, why are you giving that concession to mm-hmm. to Watkins but okay. not to Allen, who can also put up great numbers if he stays healthy?
I'm not giving the concession to him. I'm just saying I think in our minds he's definitely a top 20 wide receiver. That would come out automatically. The thing is, if I can get Jarvis Landry or Golden Tate, I think I'm going to take those two guys ahead of Keenan Allen this year, which I know they are going to produce. That's the point I was going to come up with, Greg. And the different thing about Jordy Nelson, as we talk about Jordy Nelson and Keenan Allen missing time.
Just come back from ACLs is where I compared them.
In 2014, Jordy Nelson scored 13 touchdowns. 7 of those touchdowns were 40 yards or more. Mm-hmm. Last season, he scored 14 touchdowns. 9 of those touchdowns were inside the 10. So it's a different type of Jordy Nelson. He wasn't just going down the field, sure. catching those bombs. And honestly, I kind of like this version. If he's going to be a red zone target again, if he can duplicate what he did last year, I really like this Jordy Nelson. I mean, we all love him running down the field wide open. And not that that can't happen, because nobody buys time like Aaron Rodgers. I mean, that guy just makes, you know, time in that pocket. So
is Sammy Watkins top 20 to you?
Sammy Watkins is my 13th overall wide receiver.
So why is Keenan Allen not in that range? He would score more touchdowns if he stayed healthy than Jarvis Landry or Golden Tate.
Wait. I'm saying I'm going to take this season, I'll take Golden Tate and Jarvis Landry over him because he's coming off that injury this year. Sammy Watkins, to me, is super dynamic. I have him 13th overall. I have Hopkins ahead of him. I can pull this up. You know, I think he's one of the most talented guys who just hasn't stayed on the field. I showed you yesterday.
Is Keenan Allen one of those guys, too?
I think Allen's a great PPR asset who will catch a ton of balls. I don't think Keenan Allen's going to score a bunch of touchdowns.
Okay.
If he doesn't take it to the house on a route, I don't see him as being a big red zone threat for them, especially when they got Gates, they got Henry. And I think Mike Williams is a guy that I think they could specifically draw up red zone plays for him, as you stated. He can go up and grab it. That's one of the things he's really good with. So that's my thing there. I'm going to take the elite.
Corey, would you take Keenan Allen over Golden Tate and Jarvis Landry?
Yeah.
So you did Keenan Allen before them. So you're opposite of Matt.
Yeah.
Okay, just wanted to clarify that. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Another one of the first round wide receivers is coming your way next here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. I want to get into another rookie wide receiver, but also kind of include Frank Stanfield's Roto Experts exclusive Edge preview on Super Deep Sleepers. Now, he literally went team by team, and I know Corey kind of had a little bit of influence on this as well. Now, he went team by team, and he was able to identify a Super Deep Sleeper that could have fantasy value. Now, The Tennessee one was the one that interested me. We're going to get into Corey Davis in just 1 second. But do you remember coming out of OTAs who the superstar was in Tennessee last year?
Tajay Sharpe.
Tajay Sharpe. He's also Frank Stanfel's deep sleeper this year for Tennessee. Let me read you what Frank wrote about Tajay Sharpe here in 2017. Frank says, quote, "When everybody's healthy, Corey Davis and Rishard Matthews are the unquestioned starting wide receivers. When the team opts to use three wide receiver sets, Sharpe is likely the first man up. We were excited about Sharp's upside last season, given his 6'3 frame and above average route running skills. Those things haven't changed. He likely needs an injury ahead of him, but he's a skilled player. Plus, the Titans offense should be very potent this season." Last year, Sharpe finished with 41 receptions for 522 yards and two touchdowns. It was a disappointment of a year for Tajay Sharpe. And it's just funny because I remember after week one, everyone's like, holy crap, we read about Tajay Sharpe. We got this strong wide receiver three. This is awesome. And then that was it. That was all over for Tajay Sharpe. This team drafted a very, very high first round pick on a wide receiver named Corey Davis. Corey Parson.
Yo.
What do we expect of this Tennessee trio of Tajay Sharpe, your boy Rishard Matthews, and Corey Davis?
I think they will see. Obviously, the key to the offense is DeMarco Murray and mixing in some Derrick Henry. Right now, Mariota's dealing with his situation with the leg. Corey Davis a little bit banged up, but he'll be fine. But once they get in there and start working, I think that we all know that Corey Davis is the most talented guy in the offense. I think he comes right in as the wide receiver one. Maybe Delanie Walker out targets him, but I think that Corey Davis has that role now. I got him ranked in the mid-30s at number 34, maybe number 35, because I might bump Willie Snead up one. But yeah, that's where I got Corey Davis. I think he's going to be the guy. I think they are grooming him to be Marcus Mariota's number one target, his go-to wide receiver. So if the young man can come in there and get it done, I'm going to be in on him. He's going in about the seventh round of drafts right now. Corey Davis is a player that I will be exposed to. I don't want to say heavily, but I am a Corey Davis believer.
Here's the thing with the Titans for me.
Absolutely.
Oh, no, you looked kind of funny when I said that.
I mean, Mariota was deadly accurate in the red zone last season. I mean,
efficient.
Yeah, he was. It was impressive, but this will be season number three. So, as I'm expecting Winston to take that jump, Mariota needs to play a full season though. That's number one. He's never played 16 games in a season. He started 12 his rookie season, 15 last year. Unfortunately, broke his leg. I do see the offense, you know, passing the ball more this season, but I just don't see it being super dynamic when they still have DeMarco Murray and you have a guy like Henry. So that's why I really love Murray. And he's coming off a broken leg. I mean, I really love what he's doing. I don't know if I'm all in with everybody else. I like him, but I think I got to keep him around that 12-13 for me.
Plus, we also have to remember that Delanie Walker is still, you know, like the big guy there in the passing game too, like he said. And it's a young quarterback, though, and like, you know, Matthews has already proven himself, but Sharpe, like, flashed for a little while, and then he kind of disappeared. There's an opportunity for Corey Davis to play a role here. How significant of a fantasy role it is, though, I'm not sure. I feel like with these rookie wide receivers in the past years, we've seen a big class, and then we've seen the class kind of like take some more time to develop. I don't think we could develop a trend there, but it's really year to year. I think Corey Davis is going to flash but be inconsistent.
You, Scott, you don't think he can out-target Delanie Walker?
I feel like Delanie Walker is like an established sort of guy. I feel like, you know, you talk about he's a rookie. I feel like eventually he will, but, you know, Mariota's got to get it down with him. He's already got the rapport with Delanie Walker.
My biggest question with the offense is how many attempts is Mariota going to have this season?
I think the attempts go up, and I think it's enough to support what they do. Obviously, they're very efficient. He doesn't need many attempts. We saw that last season with Marcus Mariota. So I'm not really worried about him. That's why everybody has him ranked so high. Obviously, his ability to run the football, his efficiency. I think Davis steps right in as the number one wide receiver. I think they went in there looking for number one wide receiver. They got the best guy in the draft. Delanie Walker is not strike fear into a Corey Davis's heart. I understand, like you say, Scott, the rapport is there, but Delanie Walker had 102 targets last year. This kid, Davis, will likely get 125.
You know, I mean, I think Corey Davis is definitely a top 40 wide receiver. I'll go that far. Where I in the 30s am I going to put him eventually as I'm redoing my rankings? I'm pretty much up to 20 or in the 20s. It's going to be interesting because, I mean, there's going to be guys in there that, I mean, who would you take this year, Corey, if you would Martavis Bryant or Corey Davis?
I would take Martavis Bryant over Corey.
Yeah, I mean,
Davis.
That's going to...
He's more established.
You know, I mean, and this is a guy who didn't play at all this year. So, I mean, that's saying a lot.
Yeah, I'm not fooling with a 32-year-old tight end that, you know what I mean, is going to catch 60 balls. I get it, you know what I mean? But I think that Davis is clearly going to come in here. As long as they're healthy and gets on the same page as Mariota, I think he's easily the number one target in this offense.
So you're taking Corey Davis over Rashard Matthews?
Yeah, no.
So you just told me he's easily the number one target in this offense, direct quote.
Yeah, okay, here's the thing. I like the routes for Rashard. Rashard Matthews is a player they get shots on when they get inside the 30-yard line. And I think Rashard Matthews will out touchdown Corey Davis.
Okay. Now we just mentioned that we think the attempts are going to go up for Mariota. What do we think about his rushes? He had 34 rushes in 2015, 60 rushes last year. He has a broken leg. What are we foreseeing for 2017?
I still think he runs the football about the same clip as he did last year. That's a part of his game. Obviously, that team is set up to run the football, exotic smash mouth. So that helps open up running lanes for the running back and the quarterback. So, I'm into his efficiency more so than anything else. What's the player we're talking about, Mariota? So I still think he gets you the same amount of rushing yards that you kind of see him been accustomed to. I don't think they're going to tell him to stop running because he broke his leg last year. I think it's a part of Marcus Mariota's game. I think you kind of got to roll with it. As far as his attempts last year, he threw the ball 451 times. I think he hits 500 this year.
In regards to Marcus Mariota, though, remember, so much of his value in the middle of the season came up because his matchups were so good. And I get how good he was. I owned him. I started him every week, and so I understand it. But the matchups he had were just perfect. And I'm someone to take a step back and not...
Well, I don't think you can do that because...
Okay.
Because if you're going to be a good quarterback, you take advantage of the matchups you're supposed to take advantage of. And there's going to be a lot of them on every quarterback schedule. So I don't think I can do that. That's like a college football way of looking at things. Oh, we played this ranked team, that ranked team. You're going to have those kind of good matchups on your schedule. A good quarterback takes advantage of those. And maybe you don't have Mariota's every week starter because of that, but I think he earned his numbers.
Well, see, I mean, I really like Mariota, but the thing that gives me pause and keeps him around that 12, 13 range for me is, like Corey said, if it's 500 attempts, you know, he still needs to be extremely efficient and he can't take a step back. Of course, I mean, if you're looking at guys that are throwing 600 attempts or more in this league, it's kind of hard not to go with them and that offense ahead of him.
All right, ultimately, going back to Corey Davis here, the rookie, and Tajay Sharpe, the man that we mentioned from Frank Stample's article, where do you take, I'll start with Corey Davis. You told me you're not taking him in front of Rashard Matthews. I'm going to give you another name and then give me a round. They'll eventually get to a round. Guy you hate. Stephon Diggs. Diggs or Corey Davis?
I don't say I hate Diggs. I don't hate Diggs. I just think that...
No, you don't like him.
No, I don't hate him. I'm a fan. I just think Thielen is going to be... I think Thielen and him even each other out. I got Stephon Diggs 3 spots ahead of Corey Davis.
Okay. Matt, do you also have Stephon Diggs ahead of Corey Davis? I know you haven't done this far yet.
Yes, I will have him ahead of Corey Davis.
Corey Davis or...
Meredith.
I'm going to lean Meredith on this one, too.
Corey Davis or Pierre Garçon? Corey?
That's a tough call right there. I think I'm going to go... It is a tough call. I have Corey Davis at 35. I have Pierre Garçon at 37.
Okay. Scotty?
I'm going to lean Davis.
I'm going to go Garçon here. Same. He's the number one guy there.
Same. Corey Davis, or that you mentioned just a moment ago, Matt, Jordan Matthews.
I'm gonna go with Corey Davis. I do like Jordan Matthews maybe a little more than most people this season. I think this putting him in the slot is perfect. And as I just mentioned to you, since 2014, he's got the most receiving yards in the slot.
Scotty.
I agree with Matt.
Jordan Matthews.
Yeah.
Corey Parson.
Corey Davis.
Corey Davis. All right, you're not messing with Jordan Matthews. Right. Last one here. Corey Davis or Kenny Britt, Matt?
I'm going to go with Corey Davis based on the quarterback situation.
Okay.
I do like Kenny Britt a lot, though.
Scotty?
I do like Corey Davis, and I'm not as big on Britt as everybody else is.
I'm going to take Davis. What's your beef with Britt?
It's Cleveland.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. You think Cleveland
number one
again.
Number one is Cleveland, and number two, I think Britt comes and goes talent-wise.
Like, had a really consistent year last year, though.
I'm not big on Kenny Britt. I've never been a big Kenny Britt guy.
I like him a lot more with Cody Kessler at quarterback.
Okay, fair enough. Let's do one more. Devontae Parker or Corey Davis.
Corey Davis over Devontae Parker by one slot.
Oh, so Pierre Garçon's 37 then.
Yep.
30, okay.
Corey Davis.
I'm going to go with Corey Davis, but it's really close.
Telling you, Corey Davis is a player that you want to have a piece of.
All right, Despacito. When we come back here on the Roto-Wire Experts, another rookie wide receiver, along with another look inside Frank Stanfield's exclusive Edge package article. Stick around. The Roto-Wire Experts in the Morning continues talking rookie wide receivers next on the Fantasy Sports Network. There's another major first-round wide receiver that was taken here this year. Of course, there's a big three, and we talked to the first two. Let's get to the third one, and of course, that's John Ross. Before we do, however, let me read you another name from the Deep Sleepers inside the Exclusive Edge Package written by our own Frank Stample, which you can read in full if you buy the Exclusive Edge Package available for you on June 14th. The name? Brandon LaFell. The team drafted John Ross in the first round this year, and they drafted Tyler Boyd last year. But when A.J. Green went down, it was LaFell that stepped up as the team's wide receiver one. LaFell proved he wasn't just a product of playing with Tom Brady in New England. Green went down with injury in Week 11, and from Week 12 on, LaFell was wide receiver 18 in standard and wide receiver 16 in PPR. He needs an injury to be relevant, but he has proved that he works well with Andy Dalton. Brandon LaFell is not somebody that's ever going to get anyone excited. I realize that. He's an old veteran that's boring. John Ross, on the other hand, is quite the opposite. He's a speedster. He is lightning quick and can go very, very deep. It is an element that this offense obviously needs along the other side of A.J. Green. And now, as a first rounder, he is somebody that is going to absolutely light up draft boards because of his potential. Corey, where is he going? Where should he be going?
Oh, he's going very late. Right now, I would be very careful with this young man right here. He has a long injury history, so I want to see him do it in the NFL before I get involved in John Ross. There's a lot of pieces in that offense, too, that's moving around. Obviously, you have the addition of Joe Mixon. Mm-hmm. A healthy A.J. Green is going to dominate targets. Brandon LaFell's on the outside. And then you bring in the tight end with Tyler Eifert. He's not really going to be on the field. But you get what I'm saying. When he is out there, he'll dominate red zone. So you're looking at somebody, a player that could pop the top on the defense like Ross. I just worry about him getting on the field. It's too risky. Even though he's going late, a dollar make you holler, I wouldn't put no stock in a redraft in John Ross this year.
Like we were talking about with San Diego, you talk about roles. And you know A.J. Green is number one guy. Tyler Eifert is the red zone, and maybe he's on some key third downs. This guy will have a defined role as – the guy that they shoot down the field on a post and a fly pattern, that they're hoping might be like a Torrey Smith with Baltimore or something like that. The reliability's not going to be there. And let's remember, we also have, with all those other pieces that he mentioned, Tyler Boyd now has another year of experience. What kind of role is he going to play? He might be a chain mover. This guy will be too boom or bust for me to trust him.
I actually drafted John Ross in my draft that's currently going on. I took him with the fifth pick in the 16th round. Ahead of him in my queue was Marquise Lee, Cole Beasley, after those two were taken right before me. I went with Ross because in this league, you do get credit for the special teams touchdowns as well. And in a best ball format, in like the 16th round with a player like this, he can have a week or two where he can just go nuts, you know, catch a couple of deep balls and stuff like that. So in that kind of a format, yeah. But I'm with Corey. I wasn't excited drafting him. And like Corey said, the injury history in college is pretty deep. I know he's tried to squash that a little bit, but it's going to be tough. And I agree with Scott. He will have a defined role on this team if guys like Eifert can stay healthy. And even A.J. Green, who's only played one 16-game season in the last 3 years, he's got a 10 and a 12 in there as well. People seem to forget that. So I do like the Bengals' offense.
All right, so after the OTAs, they asked Green about Ross. This was A.J. Green. This is A.J. Green's reply. You know what, John, we're not going to rush him in. He's not going to have to be pressured to play right away. We've got a great receiving core, so we're going to give him some of his plays and let him work himself in. There's nothing there for him right now.
You're hoping like Tyreek Hill style plays, maybe like a little end around. He returns a couple of kicks here and there.
Yeah, I don't know if
I see him like a gadgety like Tyreek Hill. Although Tyreek Hill's more better than a lot of gadget players. Yeah, I see this guy as like a big, defined downfield threat, but you can't rely on something like that. 15th, 16th round, yeah, that's fine, but you're going to have to hope for the deep ball. There could be weeks where it's a one catch, 54 yards and a touchdown, and the next week, nothing.
Yeah, but I do think they will try. They will have a couple gadget plays. He's just too fast.
It's too much. You're right, Madika. It's too much speed.
I'm going to try that.
It's too much speed. Anything he can scare the shit out of the defense, too. Yeah. You feel what I'm saying?
Take the top off.
Yeah.
What about Frank Stafford's prediction here of Brandon LaFell? Will he have fantasy relevance? You love it.
I love it.
Yeah,
I love it.
It's a good, solid guy to have. Of course, if Eifert goes down, who's...
Who always goes down.
Yeah. Who, if he can stay in the field, the guy's one of the most efficient players. And A.J. Green, like I said, I love A.J. Green, but if he does go down, you saw what he can do. And I would rather have LaFell than Tyler Board.
I'm not a LaFell guy. I don't think efficient is the word. I don't think he does anything special. I think he's a better NFL player than a fantasy player.
But when A.J. Green went out last year, he killed it.
You really can't deny that. I mean,
A.J. Green's there now, so I don't know if I'm going to be
back. But this is deep sleep.
There's too many pieces there.
So Brandon LaFell is the second piece in the passing game, though.
With Eifert back?
You think Eifert going to play? Draft him on your team. You think you're going to get anything from Tyler Eifert? Draft him on your team.
I don't know. I don't know if any
time. He played 14 games in 14 years. I'm not tripping off of Tyler Eifert, but I'm telling you, it's A.J. Green. It's the running backs. It's Brandon LaFell if something happens to A.J. Green. Something happens to A.J. Green, the proof is in the pudding.
But what if that something doesn't happen to A.J.
Green? Well, then he's just a piece.
Yeah,
he's just
exactly.
Like he's just a piece.
Yeah, but what are you paying for?
That's where I'm at. I'm kind of on the same page as you, but that's where I'm at. You know, knowing that A.J. Green is not hurt.
If A.J. Green gets hurt and he's on the waiver wire, you're going to put a fat bit in for him.
Yeah, but right now.
A hefty one.
But right now, with A.J. Green there, he's...
But are we talking deep sleepers?
We are.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's Brandon LaFell qualifies. Ultimately, when it comes to John Ross, who again is the rookie wide receiver we're kind of focusing on, it seems like he's behind both Mike Williams and Corey Davis or everybody at this table.
Deep, far
behind these guys. Okay. All three guys, of course, they're first-round rookies. It's interesting because it seems to me that Corey Davis is far ahead of both of these guys. Mike Williams is clearly in the middle, while John Ross...
Corey Davis has an excellent opportunity. He's coming into a team with no real number one wide receiver. He's going to... I feel as if he's going to out-target Delanie Walker right now this year in year one. They went and got this piece early in the draft. They know they needed him. They went up there. They got him. They brought him in. He's going to be the number one wide receiver. He's a player to invest in, Corey Davis. Let's see what he has. Mike Williams, I need to wait a little bit longer to see what he's doing. I need to see him get healthy. I need to kind of see what's going on in training camp. He's going to be a beast. Love him in Dynasty. Well, not really, because you don't know who his quarterback is going to be in 5 years. His quarterback could be, whoever in 5 years. You know, mm-hmm.
they can bring back Charlie Whitehurst.
They can bring back the clipboard Jesus. You know what I'm saying? He's the dynasty. If you got him in dynasty, that's the quarterback when Rivers retires. Corey Davis in the dynasty, though, you know who his quarterback is going to be. It's going to be Marcus Mariota. This is going to be a dynamic wide receiver quarterback tandem for years to come, and Marcus Mariota and Corey Davis. So get involved with Corey Davis.
Yeah, I mean,
he got the name Corey.
I totally agree.
Yeah, he does have the name something. Corey. Yeah.
People named Corey get it done.
Well, I think the Titans taking him was perfect. I think he's the new, that prototypical new age receiver that teams want. And I think the Jags taking Fournette, I think both those teams filled two very big needs. And I think they are both going to I think the Titans will open it up a bit more. And I think Jacksonville is really going to try and run the ball. And, I mean, conservatively, you have to figure Fournette's going to get at least 250 carries.
Yeah,
that's I see Fournette going like the second round.
He
like
is. Draft, that's what he's living at.
Draft champions. It's like people like, oh, there's that bell cow type back.
Well, you know, he gets 300 carries.
They don't really exist anymore. Like the role is there.
How
but
don't
I
exist,
still,
Scott? They got you. Just it's, we got three of them sitting at the top of the draft board.
I'm saying outside of that though, it's more an exception rather.
Yeah, but
than
I think we got six in the
today,
first round.
Melvin Gordon's a bell cow. Shady's a bell cow. Freeman's a bell cow.
Freeman's not a bell cow. He's got Tevin
Coleman. He put
Coleman
up bell
there.
Cow numbers.
But he's not a bell cow. Yes, he put up bell cow numbers, but he's not a bell cow.
For what we do, he's a bell cow.
For what we do, I would have to agree. And he's the guy that lives inside
Murray,
the 20.
Murray's a bell cow.
Mm-hmm. Murray's got Henry there, too.
Murray put up bell cow numbers.
I mean, three out of the last 4 years.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is
guy.
When you look at it from a scouting perspective, those guys don't carry the ball full time. My point is,
Murray does.
But you need to look at it as this guy might
looking
get 300
I'm getting to that, but like what I'm saying is, they're looking at like he's not going to share with anybody. There's not going to be a Derrick Henry. There's not going to be a Tevin Coleman. What I do worry about though is this offensive line, though.
Jacksonville. Brandon Albert hasn't showed up yet. They get Brandon Albert in, they're better than you think. They did make some upgrades. They're poor in pass protection. Jacksonville's offensive line,
give up
but
sacks,
they can block runs.
But what I'm saying is they give up sacks that stalls the offense, though.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. Sacks do stall offense, but they can run block. They just can't pass protect.
I don't doubt Fournette's talent himself. It's what around him that concerns me a little bit.
Well, what I like about him is we talk about the opportunity. And as we say, I think this is a supreme talent. And 300, if he gets 300 carries, You are going to get your money's worth with him.
Where's he going to finish? Where's Leonard Fournette going to finish? Is he going to finish in the top 10?
Is he going to finish in the top 10? Let me finish my projections before I answer that.
Okay.
You know, I just want to throw something out of my book.
I really want to put him at number 10. I think after the top 7 with like Murray there, then you go, you got a giant Howard. So that I think the top 9 is set. I don't think anybody really argues that.
You know, I don't trust Howard.
I trust the talent. I just don't trust that team. That's my little concern with Cam Meredith as well, is if they go to this rookie quarterback, I think it's a shit show.
But then it all goes to hell if they put Trubisky in.
But I think you have to put Howard in.
For rankings purposes, but I've been skipping him on draft boards, Greg. I'm not comfortable with Jordan Howard. I think a sophomore slump could be there for Howard.
But see, that's the thing with rankings. You got to look at rankings, but you got to construct your team properly.
No doubt.
That's the thing.
And Howard just hasn't popped on any of my teams yet. And if he does, he's going to be an RB2. So I don't know. I don't like the sophomore slump. I don't like the Chicago thing. I like the passing game in Chicago if Glenn is the quarterback.
When we come back, we'll wrap up the show, send you into the OGs and finish it off. It's Road Rushers in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. My man Keon Broxton bringing us in there. Final couple minutes of the program. One last thing I wanted to read. Because one last rookie and one last sleeper that we can read from Frank's list inside the Exclusive Edge package, June 14th. Deep sleepers. The Los Angeles Rams is Tyler Higbee. Higbee is a former wide receiver in college, converted to tight end, and a huge target at 6'6". In tight end friendly Sean McVay's offense. Last season, when McVay was with the Redskins, Jordan Reed and Vernon Davis combined for 146 receptions, 1,269 yards, and 8 TDs. McVay has already talked up Higbee, saying he can stretch the field in the seam. Obviously, the height can make him a useful asset in the red zone, too. That's the deep sleeper. The rookie, of course, is Gerald Everett, another major tight end from South Alabama, or, small school. But Sean McVay, the new coach in Los Angeles, is looking for weapons. Stanford recommends Higbee. I bring up Everett. We all know that rookie tight ends struggle in year one. We'll get to the first round tight ends in Njoku and Howard and Evan Ingram tomorrow on the program. But in the last couple of minutes, Tyler Higbee, Gerald Everett, Matt Modica, do we have interest in the tight end scene in L.A.?
I think we do. Tyler Higbee was a guy that I drafted late in a lot of draft champions last year. Was on my watch list in a lot of leagues. Just never came to fruition. They went out. They drafted another tight end. This could be something where they implement a two tight end system, because I mean, I don't think Goff has proved that he can. You know, they're going deep yet.
Yeah, and Goff is picking up this offense better. And when I watched him last year in the preseason, every time he got into trouble, he threw to Higbee. I think there's a relationship in there that has been established probably in practices and camp and things like that. So I'm going to go Higbee here.
Corey, can I interest you in either Tyler Higbee or Gerald Everett?
Not really. But if anything, a dollar make you holler on either one of them. They're okay. About the same to me. You know, somebody round 19, round 20. Take a shot on them, because obviously they got to figure out some kind of way to move the football out there in Los Angeles with the Rams. And I think they do a better job of it this year, but I'm not really ready to get behind anybody in that offense not named Todd Gurley or Robert Woods.
Okay, fair enough. And I just thought Tyler Higbee would be an interesting name, just a reminder to keep in mind on draft day. Don't make you holler, like you said. All right, Corey, what is coming up next on Old School Fantasy?
Old School Fantasy, we're going to talk about, Matt Modica was talking about his quarterback rankings a little bit earlier, so I want to get into that with him and George and myself. So we'll be talking about the quarterback position. So that's what's coming up on Old School Fantasy. The OGs talking about some quarterbacks. Also, Marshawn Lynch. You see, I don't know if you guys saw the video of that run that he broke off in practice yesterday.
I did not.
And Marshawn Lynch looks like a healthy, fresh Marshawn Lynch, ready to show Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson that they can kiss his ass.
Well, we'll see if he makes that happen. I was looking at some quarterback rankings yesterday. I saw Derek.
You like that?
I saw that Derek Carr is actually ranked.
Huh?
Derek Carr is ranked pretty low on some boards, which I find very interesting.
His play is better than Derek Carr. That Derek Carr don't run. Derek Carr has Derek Carr thrown 30 touchdown passes?
Derek Carr was a tale of two seasons for him last year.
Yeah.
You know, he got very hot early and then he tailed off.
He's terrible against the AFC West. I got him at 15.
Scott.
That's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing him around 15. I find that very, very interesting. No one likes Derek Carr anymore.
I'll tell you what, I got him when we talk about your Old School Fantasy. So there you go right there. It's a segue.
Tease.
That way.
Derek Carr. Lay it up. I see. You'll have to listen to quarterback
rankings. What's wrong with you?
You said segue that way.
That way.
For Corey, coming up next. And of course, all these guys' rankings, including the Kings Inside Exclusive Edge package, June 14th. Get excited for it. It's coming up. We are 2 weeks from, 1 week from tomorrow. The Exclusive Edge package is unveiled.
You gotta have your stuff ready, Scott, because I'd hate to have to kick your ass again this season. You feel what I'm saying?
You don't have to worry about me. I'd
kick your ass against this season.
5-9 against me.
When the chip was on the table, the fantasy you
still didn't win the championship. So God gave losing to you and rock and roll to me.
When the money was on the table, the fantasy executive got it.
5-9.
Scott, that's a camera over there. They can see that hand motion you doing to me. That's that. You might get fired, which I'd hate to see that happen.